You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla Darroche. Today, we have a very sciencey show for you today. So before we introduce all the individuals in this room, I just want to say that we have a March for Science coming up on Saturday. You may have heard of this, Robin. Why don't you just to give a short spiel for that, and then we can go on to kind of the sciencey conversation that we have prepped for today.
Certainly, Kayla. The March for Science was organized by people who value science and recognize that it is everywhere and affects everyone. There have been recent actions by the federal administration and Congress that would seem to indicate they are not among the group of people that feel that way. So it's a movement which has plans for policy change and community outreach, which began with a march on Washington, D.C., and now has over 500 marches in communities planned in 40 countries. The group feels that it's imperative to celebrate and defend science from starting from the local school level to federal agencies, and we champion a robustly funded and publicly communicated science that strengthens the common good. So locally, we'll be meeting down at the AC lot at 10 a.m. this Saturday, the 22nd. We'll basically just be doing a loop around the downtown area, probably 15 minutes. Unfortunately, the weather forecast does not appear to be as nice as today, but we'd like to encourage everyone who cares about science and wants to let that be known, join us.
All right. And we can talk a little bit more about that march a little towards the end. But first, we can speak a little bit about why science and studying science is so important and about the real world effects and real world realities that we have going on. Because we have an upcoming event or series of events called the Kodiak Area Marine Science Symposium. And we have our organizers and our speakers here today, just a small number of them, just three of them. So why don't you guys introduce yourself, and starting with you, Julie, let's start with you.
Yeah, hi, I'm Julie Matwiu. I'm the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program agent here in Kodiak. And I've been about 6 years into my position here. And this is one of the things that Sea Grant does really well is host local regional science symposiums. This symposium is the third event that we have hosted since 2011. And we have an amazing lineup of speakers. We have over 40 presenters from on-island and off-island coming to our community for this three-day event. And we got lots of goodies in there.
And we have a keynote speaker here with us today. Why don't you introduce yourself as well?
Hey, Kayla. My name's Julia Parrish, and I'm a professor at the University of Washington down in Seattle. And I'm also the executive director of a citizen science program called the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, aka Dead Birds on Beaches. And in fact, there are coast volunteers here in Kodiak and have been for, gosh, 5-6 years, quite some time. So I'll be talking about at the symposium what you can actually tell about the marine environment by walking the beaches and seeing what washes in on the tide.
And as we'll talk about a little bit later, volunteer observers are actually now a big part of some of the studies that people are doing. I just spoke with a scientist, you may have heard him on the news, who's using observers like the people as part of the program to collect the information about what kind of effect global warming has on seabirds. And you have all these volunteers because you have a lot of people that love birds and are interested in birds.
Yeah, you know, the point that you make is really a good one. I think that in communities, especially the communities here in Alaska and on island here on Kodiak, you all live really, really close to the environment, right? You depend on the environment for livelihood. You depend on it for recreation. You know what's going on much more so than scientists that are at a university. And so that partnership between science and community members, you all can tell us so much more about what's going on. And when you think about it, There's 7 billion people in the world, and that's a lot of eyes and ears out there figuring out what's going on. So imagine that partnership between all of those people everywhere and scientists everywhere, all the scientists that are marching throughout the world on Saturday. That's a really super powerful combination.
And I'm going to want to return to that in just a few minutes. We could talk about what you want to cover in your keynote speech, too. I just want to introduce Paula Cullenberg. Yes?
Yep.
With Sea Grant.
Yeah, I'm the director of Alaska Sea Grant. I'm from Anchorage, but I'm in Kodiak a lot, which is great. And as Julie said, I agree that linking community members with science, especially the science that's done in their backyard, in their region, is something that we really prioritize, as we certainly prioritize community monitoring as well. And I agree with the comments that Julia made. But actually, we're hosting another regional science conference next week on Alaska called the Western Alaska Integrated Science Conference. So it's something that we feel strongly that local people in their communities know a lot, have a lot of experience, really invested in the environment, and of course need to be able to hear about the research and the science that's being done in their backyard. So,
And of course, your job and your organization also fit into this March for Science issue, because Sea Grant is in danger of being defunded.
Yeah, we've been pushing back a little bit on the administration's proposed budget for FY18, which starts in October, recommends that the Sea Grant program nationally be zeroed out of the federal budget, and we don't think that's a good idea. And we've been reaching out to people in the state to get their opinion. Our delegation has been very supportive, and so I think we have a long way to go with the budget, but you know, it was sort of unfortunate to see that proposal by the administration.
So if listeners care about these issues and continuing to support science is important to them, they can join the march, which is on Saturday. And where is the AC parking lot?
Alaska Commercial, downtown, so that would be in between the Orpheum Theater and Credit Union One on the other side of the street.
Okay, and what time should they meet there again?
10 a.m.
10 a.m., all right. Okay, so why don't we start first with a little history about the Science Symposium. Like, how many years has this been going on, for example?
Yeah, this symposium was organized initially in 2011 by another Marine Advisory Program faculty, Kate Wynn, and I had just started on at that time and had the opportunity to slide into my job and sit down and for a three-day science symposium. And it really is has been a wonderful event. The idea behind this event is to bring the research that's being done around the Kodiak region and archipelago to the community and provide for an interactive forum where the community can hear the research that's being done in their backyard, because we have a tremendous amount of work being done in our region, and provide opportunity for discussion and people to ask questions, meet the researchers. And so it's been designed from the beginning to be it's set up as a scientific conference with, you know, back-to-back plenary sessions with the many talks, but we also build in some social components and social events in the evening and throughout the day, so people can really network and have a good time as well. So we're kicking off the event tonight with Julia Parrish. She's our invited keynote speaker, and this is again the community reception, and she has volunteers here. So that'll be our evening kickoff, and then starting Wednesday at 9 a.m., we'll run 2.5 days straight of scientific talks, and we also have some tours and workshops mixed in and receptions over at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center. And before I go too much further, too, I really want to thank Alaska Sea Grant. Alaska Sea Grant is the host for this symposium. It's the primary contributor. We do have other partners in conducting this symposium, but I thank Paula for contribution to this. And like I said, Sea Grant does this well, and it's amazing the amount of conferences going around our state right now that Sea Grant's part of, and it's something that I'm really proud to bring to our community. So yeah, it's been a lot of effort, a lot of local organizing. We've got like 12 people on our steering committee locally, and it's really designed to be there for the community.
Could you talk a little bit about your background, what you do, and then what kind of themes you want to address in your keynote speech.
Sure. So I'm a seabird biologist, so study those birds that live sometimes on land, but mostly over the water, mostly in the ocean. And as y'all know, there are millions and millions of seabirds that live in Alaska, just amazing, amazing numbers. And there are millions more that come from as far away as Chile, Peru, New Zealand, Australia, come all the way up here to spend part of their life every year. And so studying seabirds in Alaska and using them as kind of sentinels or indicators of what's going on in the marine environment turns out to be a really good idea because they live a long time and they've got to be in sync with what's going on in the marine environment. What food is out there for those birds? Are they going to get enough to raise their kids if they're breeding here in Alaska? Are they going to get enough to put on enough fat to be able to fly to wherever they're going to? And so seabirds as indicators of marine environmental health, and especially coastal environmental health, turns out to be a really good idea. A lot of people are doing that around the world, but scientists can't be everywhere, right? We can only be in our labs, maybe with our students, and there are beaches everywhere in the world. But it turns out that people, there are coastal communities almost everywhere, and if we can involve people in the communities, in my program, the Coast Program, just simply walking along a beach, the same beach every month, looking at the changes, seeing what's happening. And in my particular program, literally seeing what birds wash in on the tide. So a little bit geeked out, a little bit CSI, but actually pretty fun to figure out. Not only what birds in front of you, so even if you're not a birder, what is that? Is that a tufted puffin? Is that a northern fulmar? Maybe it's something like a crested auklet or a least auklet that breeds out on the chain. And what killed it? And are you seeing the same things on your beach as Paula or Julie or Robin might be seeing on their beaches? So am I just seeing this one-off thing, or is there a larger die-off? So a good example of that is last year, you might remember, lots and lots of MERS coming in. Washing it everywhere on Kodiak. Turns out almost everywhere throughout the Gulf of Alaska, down to southeast and out the chain. Just literally hundreds of thousands of those birds washing in all within about 2 months of time in December, January. And so big, big changes in the marine environment. And those birds are literally starving to death because of the changes in the food. And we're using that signal of how many birds and who is it to tell us that, because we don't have those instruments out in the middle of the Gulf. We can't really tell what's going on. So we use the birds as sentinels to see what's going on.
And did the MER die-off relate to the warming of the ocean, the phytoplankton that Hopcroft will, there's one person who will be speaking about that at the symposium, Russ Hopcroft. He's one of the first speakers tomorrow morning.
Yeah, so Russ does a lot of really amazing work on those critters. You can think of them as the insects of the sea. They're the zooplankton, so copepods, small krill, good example of those organisms. And if there's going to be a change in the physics, or the chemistry of the ocean, so how warm it is and where it's warm, those guys are going to feel it first. Birds are a few levels up from there. And yeah, Russ is definitely going to talk about that. So you may have heard of the blob, big, big lens of warmer than normal water that covered an area in the Northeast Pacific larger than Canada. I mean, amazingly big area. And it persisted for 2.5, nigh on to 3 years. Affected the lower 48 coastline first. We got a huge, huge die-off of a smaller bird called Cassin's auklets. And there we think easily 300,000 to 500,000 of those birds died. And then in the next year, we saw MERS dying principally in the Gulf of Alaska, but spreading a little bit down to the lower 48 and out the chain. And just this year, we've seen a die-off of tufted puffins leaping over Alaska Peninsula into the Bering Sea, so centered on St. Paul and the Pribilof Islands. And as that warm water moved up into the Bering and Chukchi, along with it, we can see those changes in the trophic structure, and we can see the effect on the birds. So can't tell you what's going to happen next. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and that's been one of the reasons we invited Julia up. She's been part of this investigation into these larger pictures. And we recognize here in Kodiak that there's been a lot of changes in Kodiak over the last couple of years, ecosystem-wise. And we have a number of speakers in tomorrow morning's session that will address these ecosystem changes. And that session title is actually called "Ecosystem Changing Ecosystems." And we'll be revisiting the unusual mortality event in 2015, when we saw over 40 whales die in the region. We had the bird die-offs. We've had a lot of ecosystem changes, and we felt it very important to bring that information back to Kodiak. So tomorrow morning's session, we'll be focusing on these changing ecosystems.
Yeah, has there anything else been discovered as far as the whale die-off goes?
I will be looking forward to Kate Savage's presentation tomorrow. I think there's still some unknowns, but we're really, you know, there are some pieces being pulled together, particularly with Russ Hopcroft's work and Julia's work, and we'll have some updates tomorrow. We'll have some talks on changing climate and fisheries, what that means to us, as well as a local and out-of-state perspective on the bird die-offs here. Yeah, so tomorrow morning session is going to be super awesome, as well as everything else. We break into a session regarding habitat and processes that affect habitat. And again, that's just a really nice mixture of talks that focus around that theme. And I just wanted to point out, too, I mean, it's hard to highlight everything in this symposium, but we've been talking a little bit about the community and monitoring and how our community can become part of that. And there's a session on Thursday afternoon or beginning mid-morning that's actually focusing on community and monitoring and talking about how we start those partnerships, how we build those and keep those partnerships. We have our Sea Grant specialist coming down to lead those discussions, as well as another Sea Grant or education specialist talking about best practices for community monitoring. And then a number of talks feeding into that conversation with a facilitated discussion after.
So when we talk about community monitoring, are we talking about the same kind of thing we were just speaking about, which is observing and counting birds and noting that and reporting it?
There's different, it looks differently in each community, and there's different ways to do it. There's people making observations. There's also outfitting our community or community member with particular science equipment that they can go out and take that measurement. There's people that help me collect shellfish when there's a need for PSP investigation. So there's a lot of ways that can look in a community, as well as having our agencies work, you know, together and integrating our work. We're all trying to leverage our resources and, you know, just share our knowledge here. So that conversation will be happening on Thursday. And I encourage anyone who's interested in this kind of science or interested in being part of that to come to that, because we'll have a directed discussion about how best to do that and how to start that network here in Kodiak.
Julia, your keynote is at 6:30 tonight. Is there anything else you wanted to say about that lecture or that presentation?
Absolutely. Everybody should come. Everybody should attend. Yeah, it's a real privilege to be here. I mean, it's such a special place, both the people and the island and also the marine environment. And so I'm really privileged to be here. I'm really privileged to work with folks in the Kodiak communities. And it's just a chance for me to share some of the stories that the Coast Program has been able to put together, because there are not only the dozen or so Coast folks here in Kodiak, but there are over 900 people in the Coast Program, stretching from Mendocino in California, it's Northern California, all the way on up to Kotzebue in Cape Lisburn, and then over to Adak. So a big stretch of the coastline, and all that information coming together allows us to look at larger scale, so bigger space and time stories than any one person could do. I really echo what what Julie is saying, community science and community-based science, I think, is really coming into its own. And I got to also put a plug in for Paula and the Marine Advisory Program of Sea Grant, and especially Alaska Sea Grant, because it's so connected to communities and helps people figure out all sorts of things, really practical things about what's going on. It's the science and really the engineering that's so essential.
Well, and I wanted to follow up. Thank you, Julia. But I also think that science conferences that are in communities help scientists do better science. I think they learn a lot. And it's so I think a conference like this, the scientists come out and they talk about all the work that they're doing. But I also think that they learn how to do their science better because they talk to people that actually know the environment intimately. And I've seen that happen a number of different times over the last few years where a researcher will come out and make a presentation and someone in the audience will correct them or give them some new information or give them some context, and they're said, oh, okay, I didn't know that actually, and I can work that, I can feed that into what I'm doing. So, you know, as Julia said, if you're just a scientist, you're out there at a one-time event. If you don't have that kind of input, you're not going to have the understanding of the environment that people who live here have on a regular basis. So I think you end up with better science when you have conferences and conversations like this.
Absolutely.
So the symposium will be at the Kodiak Harbor Convention Center. It continues into Friday?
Yeah, we'll end midday Friday.
Okay, where can people find a full schedule?
Yep, that's online at alaskaseagrant.org events. We have a lot of Facebook postings that you can find the link to the symposium. And on that symposium schedule, you can pull up the full detailed schedule plus the abstract books that can help you direct, or sorry, the abstracts that can help direct your interest and find out a little bit more about the presentations. We have, like I said, 2.5 days of plenary talks during the daytime and evening events. On Wednesday night, we have the poster night, and this is an opportunity for poster presentations. We follow this kind of scientific symposium style, and not everybody's ready in their research to give an oral presentation, and this is an opportunity to stand by your poster and help explain the work that you're doing. So that'll be Wednesday night, and along with that, we're having a first time we're doing this, we're having a kids' corner. So we're encouraging young science-minded families to come. I recognize there's a lot of my co-workers and colleagues have young children, so it provides a little bit of opportunity for the kids to go play, and we have the Girl Scouts helping out with that. They'll kind of take over and lead some of the activities, and so we'll have a little kids' corner in conjunction with the social event. So I'm hoping that we see lots of families out.
And there's also a beach bird die-off alert training. What's that all about?
Yeah, so that's happening Wednesday. At lunch. Mm-hmm. So in the COAST program, the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team program that I run, we do normally about a five-hour training. We teach people how to survey beaches. We teach them how to identify birds. We leave them with a key to dead birds, over 90 color photographs. It's the only key to dead birds you'll find for Alaska. But for some folks, that's a little much to say, yeah, I'm going to commit to go out and monitor a beach every month. There's a lot going on in life. And so you kind of want information, but you don't want too much information. Want to dip a toe in the water, but not dive in. So the die-off alert training is one way to get trained in just over an hour about what to do if you're out on the water or you're out on the beach. Maybe it's getting on towards winter, and suddenly you find yourself with surrounded by a lot of dead birds. What do you do? How do you identify them? Who do you call? How do you get what kind of information? The die-off alert training will give you that in under an hour. And our hope is that by doing die-off alert trainings throughout communities in Alaska, we can put community members more in the driver's seat of control of what's going on when we get die-off events, like the MER die-off, like the tufted puffin die-off that we've seen in Alaska. Because it's not really whether we're going to have a next one, it's when that's going to happen because things are changing so fast. So being in control of what's going on in your community and being able to collect the data in community and share it with scientists rather than just give it away, I think that's where we're all going. That's what we're all talking about when we talk about community-based and community-driven science.
Yeah. So we only have about five more minutes, but I wanted to talk about Sea Grant and the funding situation there. So could you kind of give a brief explanation of what is going on?
Well, as I mentioned, the federal budget comes down from the president's office, and so the president has submitted a budget to Congress, and in that budget proposal, he recommended that Sea Grant be zeroed out nationally. We're not a large program. We're a $73 million a year program, which isn't that much in the huge federal budget. There are 33 Sea Grant programs around the country. Every coastal and Great Lakes state has a Sea Grant program. So the administration proposed zeroing out the Sea Grant program. The budget then goes to Congress, and they, similar to what's going on with our state legislature right now, they look at the budget and they change it and add things in. And, you know, we would like to see Congress not go that way. We'd like to see them refund Sea Grant. And this happened a number of years ago during the Reagan era. We were zeroed out of the federal budget by the administration and then refunded again through Congress. And so we're hoping that that will happen. That probably won't happen until later this summer. As I said, I really want to recognize our delegation. Senator Murkowski, Sullivan, and Congressman Young have been very supportive, written letters, passed resolutions, sponsored the reauthorization of the Sea Grant bill. So I think the best thing that Alaskans can do that care about that issue is to communicate with those three members of our delegation about their thoughts about that.
And Paula, maybe if I can just leap in here quickly to put that number in context, $73 million, it sounds like a lot of money if you had that all by yourself, but that's about the cost of building one new hospital in the entire country, right? That's less than the wing of a B-52 bomber.
Right, and you know, we in Alaska, we get about $1.5 million in federal Sea Grant funds, and then the university matches that, and then we use that to bring in other projects. So really, the Sea Grant, federal Sea Grant money is sort of the backbone. It's the skeleton of the Sea Grant program, but our budget is larger than that. We just depend on that federal funds to get that started, so.
So, besides joining the march on Saturday and using that as a platform from which to be active and speak out on this, people can write.
Right. They can write to Senator Murkowski, Senator Sullivan, or Congressman Young and just, you know, provide their opinion on what they think about that. Just to, you know, when we have $1.5 million, the kinds of things that we do is, I think this year we're funding 12 graduate students. We're funding 6 to 7 research projects. We have about 12 grants with coastal schools to do Sea Week and marine education. We have 12 marine advisory agents that are located in 8 coastal communities, and we train annually hundreds and hundreds of Alaskans. So that's basically what we do with our federal dollars.
Robin, could you remind us when the march is on Saturday?
That's we're gathering at the AC parking lot at 10 a.m.
Okay. So, and how long is the walk going to be?
I envision about 15 minutes if people want to visit and talk where we go from here. We would do that after the march.
All right. So you've been listening to Talk the Rock. We've been talking about the upcoming Science Symposium, about Sea Grant, and about the Science March on Saturday. You can go to camxt.org to find more information on these. We can provide some links on there. Or you can listen to the entire audio right there. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Kayla.